I'm just curious, what kind of challenges do you face in Charleston? I mean, you've got a unique opportunity there. I've preached in your church. I think you have a real sweet church. But what kind of challenges do you find, and especially in this booming area, right? You get a lot of people. You have a lot of people moving in.
We do.
Yeah.
I think I read recently that South Carolina is the fastest growing state in the country.
Really?
Yeah, that more people are moving to South Carolina than to any other state. And I love South Carolina. You know, there's something very special. Of course, I was converted in South Carolina at Clemson University. And then, you know, I've known so many South Carolinians. There's kind of like a South Carolina pride, you know, that's similar to Texas pride, you know?
Yeah.
So love it there. And Charleston is in many ways ground zero. My friends in Greenville might argue with that. But, Charleston is wonderful. I think, you know, probably one of the biggest challenges would be just the worldliness, the affluence in the area. Really, over the last 10, 15 years, Charleston has been transformed. So much gentrification going on, new companies coming in. You know, Boeing came in 15, 20 years ago. It's just exploded with growth. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, there's just this kind of low country lifestyle, near the sea mentality. It's like any, I guess it's like San Diego, right? There's sometimes this thought that, you know, life is supposed to be casual and you go out on your boat and, you know, if you get to church, that's fine. If not, that's fine.
That's a California problem too.
Yeah.
And high recreational cultures.
That's it.
This is what we deal with. I mean, when I was in a rural area with Sunday night, the church was full. That's what people did.
There's nothing else to do.
There's nothing else to do. Which can create the problem of formalism, right? Yeah.
Yes. So I think that, you know, that's a challenge. And you know, I always tell pastors, if you want to stay humble in ministry, have a prayer meeting and an evening service, because you know they're not going to be very well attended most of the time. And and I'm always hopeful that that they will be one day. And I do believe that if there is revival, if there's a extraordinary work, if, you know, you talk about revival being the an extraordinary response to the ordinary means of grace,
right?
If there is that. And there's a great movement of the spirit. Right. I think that prayer meetings will be full and that evening services will be full.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, these are wonderful things, avenues we have. Think of, I mean, I know in the Westminster tradition, prayer is a means of grace. You know, we may say it secondarily in the, in our tradition, but it is absolutely true. Prayer is what a blessing to be able to call upon the Lord. And anytime you see throughout history, these, you know, a revival in the right sense, I get all the abuse, but see, the people were praying.
That's
you
it.
Know? And I was just thinking, even when like in Daniel 9, before they were about to go ahead to Babylon, the first thing we have is a deep prayer of confession.
Yes.
Finally, the prophet's awake. Finally, the people are awake. And what are they doing? You know, before we see the Lord delivering, we see prayer, right? We see prayer. What you don't see before the deliverance often comes is complaining and fighting and, you know, separation. In other words, God prepares the hearts of his people by first sending a Nathan through the preaching of the gospel and who says, you're the man. And that kind of humility comes out in God's people.
Yes. You know? Let me ask you this in terms of prayer, Chris, one thing I've been thinking about is just the whole subject of Reformed Catholicity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are certain groups that won't even pray with other Christians that aren't of their same.
Right.
It's kind of an extreme narrowness, kind of an extreme provincialism within their own denomination. You think of the Wisconsin Synod Lutherans, for instance. And, you know, as the culture grows in their hostility towards Christians, as we see, for instance, the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope making this, I should maybe say the Roman Catholic Church, just the Pope, who I know represents the Catholic Church, of course, but making a statement about the blessing of gay unions, making a lot of Roman Catholics upset, of course. I was talking to our friend Mike Brown, and he was saying that a lot of people in Milan are not happy
yeah.
right now, you know,
that with means the Pope. You know what you call somebody who complains against the Pope, right?
Protestant.
Protestant. It's like, don't people figure this out?
Yes, you know? Yeah, yeah. Join us. Absolutely. But so I say all that to say, it seems like the potential for there to be greater hostility against those with basic Christian beliefs and values, the possibility of persecution, you know, right. rising and so forth. How important is it, Chris, that there is a greater expression of Reformed Catholicity? And for our you know, listeners, this idea that while we hold fast to the essentials of the faith and even of our Reformed mm-hmm. confessions, mm-hmm. we're not going to bicker and fight each yeah. other on these narrow sort of secondary and tertiary doctrines every chance we get, right? Right. How important is that for us in our day?
Well, I think my thought on that, John, is that if we ever did get to a time of pretty intense persecution, that's probably what's going to have to take to wake us up to that. Mm. And that's sad. Mm. Does it have to? Mm-hmm. Right? Does it have to? But social media doesn't help. We just, you know, we throw darts at each other all the time. You know, it was again, Bob Godfrey's Reformed dream that we would be able as the Reformed to unite and not separate on some of the issues that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we haven't accomplished that well in our own camp. And, you know, and I agree, it's, you know, we've had ministerials here at the church where the pastors from the community have come. I have seen some pretty weird things. I've seen some really weird things, yeah. but there, you know what? I didn't take it that way. I took it as this is an opportunity for me. Hopefully if they have questions about the church, they came in our building and saw, well, you don't have a band or a screen.
Yeah.
You know, but we did pray. I had no problem praying, you know, with some of these brothers. I don't know where they stand on a lot of issues,
mm-hmm.
but is that something that I think is going to be important? I definitely think it needs to begin in our own house. Well, first.
Yes.
Right. I think we have to, as Reformed churches, we have our confessional differences on things. You know, we're all hot in debate on the cultural stuff right now. Well, what it should be doing is bringing us together more in prayer. I mean, that's yeah. absolutely true.
And evangelism.
And evangelism, yes. Putting our resources together. Let me give you a perfect example. Why does it always have to be the parachurches?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I had a wise minister tell me one time, you know, we've criticized parachurches. I think there's a lot of right criticism for parachurches, but they're often doing the work that the local church isn't. But, you know, I just take this little program, Abounding Grace. I sit with a board of about, you know, 6 or 7 people, all from different Reformed churches that work together.
Mm.
And the unity we have, the prayer, the project has been really blessed.
Well, even yesterday, the conference mm-hmm. with the yeah. Baptist brothers, you know, yeah. who are doing good work. And I just think it's important to project that
right.
Reformed Catholicity.
Absolutely.
A warm-heartedness
yeah.
to our confessional Presbyterianism.
Right. To laugh with each other on these. I gave him a hard time about yeah. the ecclesiology at one point,
yes.
you know, and he laughed and
yeah.
he, you know, but it wasn't, there was no sense of antagonism. This is my brother.
Right. right? Yeah. And to have these debates, it's a good thing.
Right.
It sharpens us. It
right.
helps us to realize what it is, you know, mm-hmm. we really believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm always happy to have those kinds of debates, but of course, they need to be done really with a heart of love and,
yeah.
and not a heart of hubris.
Yeah,
looking to just win an argument.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that with it means that we're going to have to. I think 2 Corinthians 10, Paul, you know, super apostles were attacking him, saying, "Well, when you're face to face, you're nice, and when you're away in your letters, you're brutal."
yeah.
I think Paul concedes a little bit there.
Yeah.
Not their attack that he's weak or compromised, but that, yeah, the pen comes across stronger than face to face. We yeah. all know that.
Yeah.
So does
we've all done it. We've
so
all done
social
it.
Media, right?
Well, it was like Luther, right?
Yeah.
Who, when he was standing before the council
yeah.
at Worms,
right.
and he said, I must admit that sometimes my writings have been harsh.
Right.
And I just have to appreciate that about the fiery Luther saying that, having that moment of humility. And it's true of all of us. There have been times we've been overzealous and have said it in a way that we shouldn't have and all that. But yeah. And
being face to face is what I'm saying is important.
Yeah. And this isn't, you know, what we're speaking of here, I think needs to be made clear is we're not talking about a kind of, you know, reformed confessionalism that's weak, that doesn't clearly state our positions. It's not convictional. Of course, we don't want to move one inch off of what it is we confess.
Especially we the core it to be true. Of our faith.
Yes. And we believe it, and we believe it is the best for everyone to believe it. Mm-hmm. But when people are at a different place, you know, it's important, I think, to warmly embrace them as brothers and sisters in Christ.
Right.
And to be patient and to also not think that, you know, every problem and every disagreement is going to be solved this side of heaven.
Yeah. Well, and I think we just in general, when we disagree with somebody today or we take an issue with somebody, people just automatically assume we think they're all going to hell.
Right.
It's like, you know, that doesn't, and maybe the demeanor doesn't help and kind of conveys that. Right. But I think again, last night at the conference, some wonderful things were said. And one was, you know, even if you're of different millennial persuasions, you know, as wrong as some may be, some of these people are sincerely trying to be biblical.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
You know,
yes, absolutely.
And I think that should be recognized in the way that we treat one another.
I also want to say that it's important when it comes to the mission of the church and doing cross-cultural mission, planting churches, that a reformed Catholicity doesn't equal an ecumenism. So, reformed churches planting Baptist churches and Anglican churches and Methodist churches, that's not reformed Catholicity. That's ecumenism. And that's essentially devaluing your doctrine and saying, you know, it's sort of all just the same. It's just a different approach and a different expression. No, I think that we need to recover, again, a kind of warm-hearted, clear, reformed mission of the church within our denominations as well. There has been...
That needs to happen.
It does need to happen.
Yeah.
And there have been, of course, over the last 30 years, reformed mission organizations that have planted and worked with other denominations in a way that, well, in my opinion, oversteps the line and not valuing our confession and our philosophy of ministry born out of our confession as we ought.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So, you know, going forward in light of our discussion about the ministry of the church mission in light of, and these are really good thoughts. I think that we don't give a lot of ecclesiastical attention to, right? We often think so individualistic. This is really helpful to think ecclesiastically to answer some of these questions, because that's not the first place we go, right? So how do you see, in light of these challenges, to continue just a few more minutes here, you know, in light of the collapse of Christendom, in light of culture changing, it would be wonderful if the church has demonstrated more unity. I'm not necessarily convinced John 17 demands ecclesiastical unity just for the reasons that you're talking about.
Someone said they hated denominations or something like that in one of our church membership classes, that, you know, God must not be pleased with denominations. And I said, well, actually, I think denominations are great because it means we're not all fighting with each other all the time. Like,
They help us to walk together in what we agree with.
Yes.
Right. So what do you think are going to be, I'm not asking you to be prophetic here, but what do you think the challenges are going to be? It's election year. a lot of political upheaval in our times that I'm a few years younger than you. I've been at 20. You said 23. I've been blindsided ministry in so many ways. I mean, who would have ever thought? When I went in, you know, years ago, we were wrestling with justification, you know? Then I had to turn around and look and see, well, a whole culture demands my submission on this issue of human sexuality. Never thought 2015 would happen.
Yeah.
Since then, we've had COVID. That really did show I think how, in many ways, it exposed, you know, the church without clothing in some ways, right? Say the emperor, but you know what I mean. In other words, there was it exposed a lot, you know, that there were people, some just not committed to the church, exposed a lot. What are the challenges going forward?
And that now transgenderism.
Now transgenderism. What's coming? Who knows? In God's providence. Yeah. How do we go forward? What do we do? What do you see are the challenges? Any thoughts on that?
I think that one of the biggest challenges, and I speak to my congregation about this regularly, because let's just be honest, you know, congregations like ours, they're going to be watching, you know, Fox News and Newsmax and some of these channels that, you know, while they may have more of a conservative approach, we need to just say very clearly, these are money-making organizations.
Right.
They're not godly in their approach. Mm-hmm. And so they're not helping make disciples. Mm-hmm. And so I have encouraged our folks to be careful not to be caught up in the angry, nervous, hopeless rhetoric.
That's
you know,
important message.
We have a little podcast in our church called Between the Times, and Dr. Gabriel Williams and I, we just talk about things kind of like we're doing right now. And we were, after doing some podcasting, sitting at a Chick-fil-A a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about all kinds of stuff. Gabe is so, he's just such a smart guy, and I love talking to him. He's very engaging, and he was, we were just talking about politics and theology and just all kinds of stuff. And this man next to us said, "I'm sorry." He actually cut me off mid-sentence. You know, this guy, he's like, "I'm sorry, I've been listening to you guys for the last 30 minutes. And he started like throwing at us all these Fox News cliches. It was like, you've heard them all, you know? And, and at the end of his little monologue, he said, "I mean, what do you think?" He had no idea I was a pastor, you know, and that Gabe was a strong Christian and a professor at the Citadel. What do you think is the answer to this? You know, I heard you guys. And I said, "Well, the answer is the gospel." And his eyes just glazed over, like, you're not.
That wasn't the answer.
This is not, this is not helpful, you know? And so I think really the answer is proclaiming the gospel, giving our people many, many reasons to be confident that the gospel is the answer to all of our problems. Mm-hmm. And to know that even if the whole American project collapses, Christ is still building his church. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, think about the first century.
Yeah.
I mean, all the epistles that we study in our churches every week, the epistles of Paul, the epistles of Peter, the epistles of John, they wrote those in the context of the Greco-Roman world. Let's not forget that. And all the things we were talking about recently on one of our podcast episodes about how relevant the scriptures are today, more than ever before, in our own context. They've always been powerful to save. They've always been instructional. But now we are in a context, this post-Christian pagan context, where so much of what Paul says is directly relatable to what we're experiencing in our own culture, right? Read the book of Romans, Romans 1 and 2 and 3. It's incredible. And so helping our people to recognize that and to have hope, not in presidential elections, not in a turnover of the power in the Senate, but in Christ and the gospel.
And I think a good reminder, you said the other day, Chris, in this election season, we're gonna see a lot of nasty fights even in the reform community.
Oh yeah.
I think that's an important thing to be aware of ahead of time. Right?
Yes.
Whoever might listen to this, I need to be aware of it. Right?
Yeah.
You need to be aware of it. In other words, you can easily fall into this and you can stand back. You ever been refreshed in the scriptures and you've been really taken by the love of Christ and his compassions? And I think of Paul, again, 2 Corinthians, you know, "I appeal to you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ," you know, that's what we've learned.
And we need to engage too with our neighbors of a different persuasion than us in a way that is loving.
Right.
And kind and gracious, and that doesn't immediately bark back if barked at.
Right.
Like, that needs to be our approach, one of gentleness and love. I think I told you the story, Chris, that I guess it was about a year and a half ago, I was bumped up to first class on a flight, and this lady sits next to me, and she begins talking to me, and I see on her lap, she has a notebook with a title on the front of the notebook, and it turns out this is a book she was working on. It had the name Jesus in it. I think it had the name Jesus in it. Anyway, it had some religious connotation on the title. And so we were talking, and she was very interesting, you know, and she was clearly a liberal. And so we had a lot of disagreements, and but we had a good conversation, a robust kind of conversation, lots of disagreements. And at the end, she expressed something like this. I don't know that I can remember a more calm and helpful conversation with a conservative in a long time. And she said, we should go public with this conversation. And I was like, huh, that's an interesting comment, you know? And she told me she had just been giving a lecture at Stanford and she was going up to the University of Wisconsin. So after the whole thing was over, I said, well, what's your name? And she said, my name's Marilyn Williamson. No, Marilyn Williamson.
Yeah.
That's the name, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. The presidential candidate.
Right.
And so I thought, that sounds really familiar, you know? And so after I got off the plane, I looked her up, and she's the one that, you know, I had seen vying for the candidacy, whatever, the year before, and, you know, with Biden and the others. And so the whole point, I guess, I'm trying to make here is, while we have all failed to give the kind of witness we should with people we disagree with, we should really, this year especially, where there's going to be so much polarized, angry talk going on, we should strive, by God's grace and in His Spirit, to be different, to be Christians, to act like Christians.
This is really helpful,
because that's going to help our witness.
We need this reminder. We need to set our minds right on this, to remember who we are, what our objectives here are, what our goals are. So.
Yes, it's to point people to Christ, not to win arguments about, you know, the presidential
election. Things that in the whole scheme of thing of eternity will mean nothing.
That's it.
So, well, thanks for coming on today, brother.
Yeah, it's been
a
joy.
You're always welcome to come to Escondido. It's called, I think the name means hidden. You can always come, hide out, you know, and we will we'll do podcasting, and you can preach. So.
Well, it's a joy. It's a joy to be here, brother.
Yeah, good to have you. Thanks, John, for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you.